White.
And I'm Brad White, and we're here in Oneonta, Alabama, in Blount County, at Analog on 3rd.
Cool. Have y'all always lived in Alabama?
I have.
I have not. I'm originally from Eastern Arkansas.
Well, and that's still the South, so yeah. I'll let you pass.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's the Mississippi Delta region, so we pride ourselves on being very, very Southern there.
So how long have y'all been in this location recording?
We got the building in October and did not... It took a while to get everything how you see it now. Stuff had to be built and manufactured, and the only thing that was in here was literally the kitchenette and this lovely blue carpet.
I would have thought it was gray, but...
Gray, blue. Everything else you see, including the drum riser, was all... manufactured.
So did you go to school for recording, or
yes,
was it so where'd you go to school for recording?
I graduated from Oneonta and then went to Sneed State for a while and did music there, and then went to University of North Alabama in Florence in the Shoals area and majored in entertainment media production, which is essentially communications with a focus on either audio, video, or production of sort. And I focused on the radio, television, and recording side of things, not much in the video.
So while you were up there, did you get to work in the FAME? Is it called FAME?
Yeah, it is FAME and Muscle Shoals Sound, the Nut House, and there's a newer one that was being built when I lived up there, that I have a friend that works there now, and most of the classes from UNA are now in that studio, and it's a brand new it's fairly new now studio up there. And it is, it's run by a guy, it was owned by a guy who wrote the song I Swear, mm-hmm. that All For One, we remember All For One doing it in the early days.
Yeah.
And then another country act, I can't remember who, redid it.
Yeah.
And anyway, he took a lot of money from that song, I think, and put it into a studio up there. So anyway, there's multiple studios up there. I stepped foot in FAME the very first day that I went to UNA and like got there and like moved into my little apartment and all that, and talked to a guy and asked just point blank, is this something that somebody like me could do? And just try to remember back from early 2000s, I think he, along the lines of, you know, you've got to make it happen. You've got to, you know, if you want to make this, you know, your job, your profession, you've got to work hard at it and be consistent with it.
Yeah.
And not give up, essentially.
It's good advice, and it's good life advice for anything you want to, really.
Yeah, it really was.
You know, I mean, you look at the people that have been handed things, and where are they?
Right.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
So, I notice lack of do you run Pro Tools or?
Oh.
Or are you totally analog?
Yeah, the DAW is Logic Pro X, and then I use these two Focusrite Clear 8 Pre-Xs and run those digital. Or analog to digital converters into the iMac. We have access to being analog, but it's been in the shop for...
Since January.
So I thought I was gonna come in here and see a bunch of reel-to-reels.
Well, you would, but it's in Nashville.
Of course it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Likely story. No,
yeah. There's, yeah. I can show you the remote control to it.
Cool. So I know that's a lost art form. Do you really know how to edit tape?
Yeah, it was. It's one of the first things that we learned in the second semester of our recording classes at UNA.
Cool.
Was literally how to record to tape. If not your whole project, at least I remember the teacher was like, if you don't record everything to tape, because it was just an 8-channel, if you don't record everything to tape, at least, you know, drums and bass or something, you mm-hmm. know. And he showed us how to, like, clean the heads and proper care.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Reel.
I know that's a lost art.
Yeah.
You know, not many people have any clue, including myself, you know.
Yeah, it's becoming more of the standard for, you know, really big bands like the Pumpkins and Foo Fighters and bands like that can really afford the big 2-inch tape.
Yeah.
Because it's not cheap.
No.
It is not.
No. Which, you bring up the Pumpkins, which leads me to another question. How the hell did Billy Corgan find this place?
Well, I always like to preface it with her story first.
It starts with me. In 2011, I had the opportunity to work with him as his research assistant on his spiritual memoir.
I didn't know that he did one.
Well, it's not done.
Oh.
He's still working on it, but there was, for a few months, I got to be his research assistant and work with him on that, and then from there, we became acquaintances, and then Brad and I met in Chicago at Billy's tea shop. We were there that weekend for his solo show that he did at the Ravinia Festival. It was a show that closed out the entire summer festival. So it was there, what, Labor Day?
Yeah.
Yeah, Labor Day weekend. And that's how I met Brad.
So, cool.
Yeah, we met through the Smashing Pumpkins. But I kind of had the... I guess the relationship with Billy, and then throughout the years we had been, you know, we went to many shows, we did the VIP experiences, he would have events and stuff at his tea shop in Highland Park, Illinois, and we would go to that, and it was October, it was Halloween of 2015, we actually got to sit down and talk to Billy and tell him how we met because of him, and he enjoyed that story. And then over January, early January, he decided to do a road trip for his 30 days documentary. And he was in Nashville, I believe, the night before. And Brad kept saying, I have a feeling he's going to come to Alabama. I really believe that he's going to come to Alabama. And I was kind of the wet blanket. I'm like, no, I really don't think so. But, I mean, it would be cool if he did. And then, lo and behold, the next day, he was in Killen.
Yeah, he was in Killen, which is right outside of Florence.
Yeah.
Going towards Athens. And he, I saw the video, and I immediately started messaging through Twitter the videographer, David Lagana, that was with him. And I was like, hey, you know, just let Billy know this is Brad and Lee. We met a while back, like in October, and he knows about the studio, and, you know, if he wants to come by, it would be great, you know, because they went to, I told the same friend that works at a big studio up there, I told him about it too, and was like, hey, if you can do something, you know, help him out, whatever, he's just kind of just roaming around up there, just kind of like sightseeing, basically, to try to get him and hang out with him, and they had, like, literally just missed each other, and he went to Fame and Muscle Shoals Sound, and anyway, sent the message and didn't hear back for a little while, and then he replied back. He was like, okay, I'll let him know. And I was like, oh my God. So, like, what, you know, like, what happens? What happens now? And I said, okay, cool. Just let us know.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, we'll let you know here, and, you know, give me a few hours and we'll let you know. And
we made a mad dash to Birmingham to Whole
Foods
to get vegan snacks for him and his type of water that he likes, and to make sure that we had it just in case, because we would hate to be without, and he wants something, so
So we mad dashed to Whole Foods, and after we got back, David sent us a message, said, okay, we'll be there Sunday 12 o'clock, you know, just keep it kind of low key, and you know, close friends and family kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I said, sure, whatever you want. So he gets here. Well, he went to Jasper, which was, you know, you think, what's in Jasper?
Yeah.
And he went to Jasper and went to some flea markets and then made his way here, went through All Good.
And, that was insane to see on that episode, too, him in All Good of all places.
Yeah, I was telling him as I was coming through, I noticed that I was going through All Good. I'm like, I want to live here so I can tell people I live in All Good.
Right.
It's all good.
It's all good, not good.
But then I'm like, no, I don't want to live here.
Yeah. So he came, ate lunch here in a Mexican restaurant, and came and he recorded four or five songs, and all cover songs, and just kind of a span of, from Hank Williams to classic tunes like Clementine and a Skeeter Davis song.
The End of the World.
Yeah.
Yeah.
End of the World.
Very cool.
Yeah, and a couple others. And he hung out for a while and met our friends and my family. And Lee's parents didn't even have time to get here.
No, it was such short notice that mm-hmm. my parents weren't able to make the trip in time because, I mean, they're 7 hours away.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was, it was cool. They really wanted to be here, but I mean, that's how quickly things fell into mm-hmm. place. And from my perspective too, you know, we both have been lifelong fans of the Smashing Pumpkins and Billy Corgan. I know it started for me when I was 11, and I think you, same age.
I can remember hearing it on, this is old, but on I-95, mm-hmm. the rock station from the early 90s here.
The Bear?
Before the bear.
Yeah.
It was I-95.
Man, you're going old school.
And yeah, you could barely pick up the Bear here.
Yeah.
And quick story about the Bear is the night before Melancholy came out, they syndicated the show in Chicago, and I literally had to hold my antenna. I don't think I've told you this, but I had to hold an antenna in my room off my boombox. To pick it up, you know, because I then became one huge antenna, and recorded most of the pre-show. The Cheap Trick played some songs too at the end of the show, and the lights went out, and that's like the name of the bootleg, Lights Out. Yeah. And so I'm like holding this antenna for like 2 hours straight so that I can bootleg off the radio. Don't sue me, anybody, but bootleg the show off the radio. And I would listen to it when I mowed the grass and stuff.
Yeah.
That's a great story. They cannot, like, kids today can't say
they
can, that.
They didn't know.
No. But I'm not here to say, back in my day.
No, but we had to work for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know, like, the first time that I heard the Pumpkins, it was on 96X out of Memphis. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was Cherub Rock, and I was in the back of my parents' car, and we were on our way to Memphis, and I heard it, and I've been a fan since then. And then he was here on that stage, and I purposely put my chair right in front of it, and I'm like, I'm getting the front row experience of a lifetime. Like, what is happening right now?
Is anything going to happen with what he did, what he recorded, or y'all don't know?
I have no idea. I mean,
yeah.
I have, you know, great quality recordings of those songs, and he did a few other songs too throughout this. We were day five for mm-hmm. the 30 Days project, and so he did a few more songs and throughout the 30 Days project. But he was listening to a lot of, I remember he said he was listening to a certain Bob Dylan box set and was very influenced on that. And oh, he let us hear a couple of songs off his solo album that's yet to come out, and asked us, you know, our thoughts on it, which, of course, it was
incredible.
Rick Rubin produced it, so
yeah,
you know,
I mean, that
quality was above and beyond.
Yeah, Rick Rubin's the shit. I'm sorry.
Of course. He's proven himself.
We agree.
Yeah, he really has. You know, believe it or not, I'm a metal guy, and, you know, after the first four Danzig albums cannot be touched, but after that, they suck.
Yeah.
And I really think Rubin had a lot to do with it. Same thing with Slayer. Everything that Slayer did with Rick Rubin was great.
Yeah.
Without Rubin,
Yeah, she asked me one time, like, what's the deal with Rick Rubin? And I was just like, you know, he's a great producer and, you know, engineer and everything, but you get him for these and this.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, like, and I'm not a big Chili Peppers fan, but, you know, Blood Sugar Sex Magic.
Mm-hmm.
It's the shit.
It is.
And I think it's because of Rick Rubin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know they did other albums with him.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't care anything for him, but it was something about where they recorded it and
Houdini's house.
Yeah, you know, and just the whole vibe of the album, and
yeah,
it's just great, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So and even the newest Sabbath album.
Yeah.
You know, it's great. Sounds great. It's
loud.
Yeah.
Seriously, like, one of the loudest albums. I'm surprised, like, how insane. I don't, like, I got it on record, and I was just surprised, like, how loud that album was. And, you know, which is what he's known for. He's known to, you know, be, like, one of the massive guys in the loudness wars and all that stuff.
But I'm sure that you've seen interviews with him. He's such a soft-spoken guy. He's just amazing, you know.
He has a very Buddhist approach to things.
Mm-hmm.
Very calm, cool.
I mean, he's definitely put the years in, that's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, going back to Beastie Boys and Slayer and, doing this, you know, being so versatile to do these things at the same time.
Oh, yeah, definitely.